everyone. I'm Barbara Hamley. A lot has happened in the news since the last time the Another View Roundtable got together. Starbucks, Roseanne, NFL on taking a knee, Eagles uninvited to the White House, Medicaid expansion in Virginia. And all of these topics are either specifically about race or carry a racial undertone. Up next on Another View, our roundtable pundits talk about race in America and why it matters, or does it? Amos Jones, Bill Thomas, and William R. Brown are our pundits, and the Another View Roundtable is next, so stay tuned.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Hamley. Lots to talk about with our Another View Roundtable pundits. But before I introduce our panel, June is Men's Health Month. And gentlemen, I want to tell you about an event, and ladies, an event happening on Saturday that could literally save a man's life. We're talking about the Spring Educational Workshop, Prostate Cancer, Knowledge, Faith, and Early Detection Matter Most. Now, this is Saturday, June 9th, that's tomorrow, from 12 p.m. until 3 p.m. at First Baptist Church East End in Newport News. That's 3000 Jefferson Avenue. And they are going to be talking about screening and early detection, treatment options and side effects, incontinence, erectile dysfunction, intimacy, nutrition, fitness. They're going to cover the gamut about prostate cancer, and they're really encouraging women to come with their men. You know, daughters come with your fathers, and wives come with your husbands, so that you can hear this information also and work together as a team in order to fight this disease. It is free, I believe, yes. And if you want more information, you can call 827-0488, 827-0488, or write to info@hrprostatehealth.com. And you can go register for this event also online. So there are a lot of sponsors for this event and so forth, but really, this is the Hampton Roads Prostate Health Forum, along with others. This is free. It's from noon until 3 tomorrow at First Baptist Church East End, 3000 Jefferson Avenue in Newport News. I know they want you to come out. They're really trying very, very hard to get the word out and help keep all of us healthy. Okay, let's move on now to meet our roundtable. He's a Washington attorney and executive director of the African American Trust for Historic Preservation, Mr. Amos Jones. You're in the studio. Thank you, Amos.
Thank you, Barbara. It's good to be back.
That's fantastic. We're so happy to have you with us. Our favorite conservative and community activist, Mr. Bill Thomas. How you doing, Bill?
I'm good, and it's a pleasure to meet Mr. Jones, but most importantly, that conference that you just spoke about, mm-hmm. with regard to healthcare disparities and the tragedy that it is taking so many of our young lives and young women's lives, and especially men. And I'm a little queasy today because we don't do our checkups correctly. We don't get the things that we need to do. They're having stuff with colon cancer coming out now. That's even getting more and more worse. It is very important for women and men to encourage each other to go get your checkups. And for knuckleheads like me who will wait until you're getting a little oozy and crazy, you can't do that anymore.
Exactly.
We have to be healthy. We have to take care of it.
Got to be proactive.
The Hampton University Proton Therapy Institute is clearly, in our research, says if we just follow our doctor's instructions, we could reduce cancer in the Black community by 50%.
Mm.
So
wow.
I would definitely encourage people, and repeat that again. I'm going to go myself because it's just so awfully important.
Noon until 3 p.m. Saturday, June 9th, First Baptist Church, East End, 3000 Jefferson Avenue in Newport News. So definitely.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Bill. We appreciate that. And he is a real estate professional, Mr. William R. Brown, making his second appearance on the roundtable. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing today?
Good. So glad glad to have you with us today.
Thank you. Just the one thing, Bill, I've already had two colonoscopies.
Okay. Good.
Proactive.
Good.
Got to be proactive. Good. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, so speaking of being proactive, this week, the Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles, were supposed to visit the White House until President Trump uninvited them and once again chastised the NFL and football players for not standing for the national anthem. Recently, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell announced new rules regarding players and the national anthem. And what he said about these new rules are that the team and league personnel on the field shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. The game operations manual will be revised to remove the requirement that all players be on the field for the anthem. Personnel who choose not to stand for the anthem may stay in the locker room or in a similar location off the field until after the anthem has been performed. A club will be fined by the league if its personnel are on the field and do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. And each club may develop its own work rules consistent with the above principles regarding personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem, and that the commissioner will impose appropriate discipline on league personnel who do not stand and show respect. So let's take a listen to what Mr. Goodell had to say.
We believe that our players should stand for the national anthem. That's an important part of our game and our moments, and we believe in that. I think we also have to keep focus on this. We have about six or seven players that are involved with this protest at this point. And this is something that what we've tried to do is deal with the underlying issue and understand what it is that they're protesting and try to address that matter. And so let me finish, if you can. So the important thing for us is to be able to do that and take that opportunity to make real differences in our community. And that is really what's going to ultimately be the important aspect for us long term.
Now, that was Roger Goodell talking about the rules changes. But President Trump has also been very vocal about his displeasure with the protests. Here's what he's had to say.
Everyone in this arena tonight are unified by the same great American values. We're proud of our country. We respect our flag. Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
So here's the question. In all of this, the meaning of taking a knee has been lost, which is about protesting police brutality, particularly against African-American men. And it started by Colin Kaepernick. So Amos, starting with you, why the diversion from the true meaning? What is this all about?
This is about control. This is about ratings. This is about an NFL that saw viewership decreasing markedly and the decision of the owners to take back their chattel and to put them into the shadows if they want to demonstrate any kind of political consciousness. But it really started when they barred dancing in the end zone and wanted to tamp down on unique black creativity. I always say that if we had waited for the other people to inform our cultural motifs, then they would have told Janice she couldn't dance,
right.
Martin he couldn't preach,
right.
And Michael he couldn't sing. And the fact of the matter is that's what started when we couldn't even celebrate in the end zone in our unique cultural ways in an entertainment environment.
Right.
So it makes perfect sense that they would go at this point and try to restore some control so that the viewers won't be made uncomfortable. And it's largely a white viewership base. And this is a racial thing.
Hmm. Bill, the president says it's all about patriotism.
It's all about money and control. Everything is. And what I'm so disappointed in all of this is that our players don't get it. If you want to take up an issue, you want to die on a hill, sure, you should stand up for the national anthem. The NBA already has these rules in place. They must. It's in their rules. I would have just shifted the story to some priority. Educating.
What do you mean?
So, I would have shifted it from the national anthem to issues that are really important to the black community.
Well, when Colin Kaepernick first took the knee, though, he didn't say he was doing it because he was disrespecting the flag.
I love this gentleman here so much. It just and
this
what he
gentleman
says,
meaning Amos Jones.
Yeah, sure, okay. sure. He announced his name, but I'm just saying that the fact is we take on too much that's meaningless.
This is not brutality against black men is meaningless.
Yes, it is, because that's a local issue. That's a local issue. Let me explain what I'm saying.
Yes, please.
Most of the cities that are having the most police brutality is America. We've been beat, shot, hung, killed by police forever. That's a reality. To combat that, when I was growing up, our parents told us what we needed to do when we were confronted by police. Because if you don't, you're going to get your butt whipped or killed. So I get that. I understand all of that. But right now, in our seven cities, in the ones that are populated by minorities, the mayor is black, the police chief is black, and this is still happening. This is still happening. So I can't control that. What I can control is control the story. The story should have been they should have shifted it. Because they're not able to do that kind of stuff. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And they should have shifted it to something that's important to our communities. Hmm. And standing for the national anthem and this colon guy is just so frivolous. It's insanity.
Let me finish. Okay, finish.
Why don't we have a black ownership of a football team by these millionaires? Why can't they collectively get together and have the ownership of property and intellectual property and talent?
And open a credit union while you're at it, please.
Please.
Black businesses, you know, under President Obama, the percentage of black Small Business Administration back loans going to blacks went down to around 1%. It had been 8% under Bush. They rewrote these regulations and freeze out black businesses.
Right.
When you freeze out black businesses, you freeze out the black law firms that are going to bring the employment discrimination
cases.
Not just for Kaepernick, who needs a good black lawyer,
Amen.
But for all these black people out here, educators, principals, veterans who are having their benefits snatched even by the government itself, and there's no capital to put into these cases.
Okay, so you brought up a couple of things, and I want to get William in here first, and then I'll come back to you, Amos. Bill says that the whole idea of protesting police brutality is not an important idea. Am I getting that correct?
I think
overall, in terms of
you got a list of priorities that you can deal with. You got a list of priorities.
Okay, and you're saying this is not
this is not at the even top of my list.
Okay. What about you, William?
Well, let's go back to what the original question was the point about the control, about the NFL, about taking a knee. Okay? When we took a knee, the purpose of it was for the police brutality. And it was changed. The dynamic was changed. And here you added on to that's not important. And that's a very important situation.
I said it's not a priority.
It's not a priority.
If it's not a priority, it's not important.
A priority is the 7-year-old who got killed in Newport News, got his brains blown out in Newport News.
Right.
Or the 2-year-old that was shot in Newport News. Or the 8 or 9, 10 people that were shot because we don't have economic prosperities in our community. It's economics. Now, if they really want to do something, they could have taken it and changed the message.
But I guess my question is...
But they did change the message.
No, they didn't change anything. And police brutality is still going on today on black equipment, white black people and white people.
But that was the purpose of the kneel. It was not about the flag.
The purpose of the kneel is not going to affect any one of us at this sitting around this table today.
It is. We're talking about it.
I'm not talking about it. I think it's foolish to talk about it.
Well, so I'm glad that we talk about it so that we can move to the real issues.
Thank you.
These celebrity events are very good at raising awareness. And what the problem with African Americans today, one of the problems is that we are completely reactive. In the real civil rights movement, we were proactive. And this is what I mean. Dr. King and all of his lieutenants, people like Fannie Lou Hamer, Adam Clayton Powell, they said up front in the 50s, we need a Civil Rights Act for accommodations and employment discrimination protections.
Policy.
We need a Voting Rights Act eventually so that we can vote and have political power, because political power is supposed to allocate economic resources like our former politicians used to understand and some people today understand, but too few. And then 3, housing. We need open and fair housing, especially if we're trying to build wealth and compete with other people 100 years after slavery. Now, civil rights doesn't operate that way. Somebody gets shot somewhere or a policeman beats up somebody, which is a small minority of police. We have to be honest.
Yes.
Police are like employers and everyone else.
Absolutely.
Racist. It's about maybe 1-5% of the whites causing all the problems. It's a small minority. It just so happens that sometimes there's a gun involved and we've got to address it. But it's no different from the denial of loans when you get into underwriting.
Amen.
for your house or your, or they give you a car because we know why, but not a house or a business loan. And so what we need to do is to stop just jumping up. Oh, because it's worthless.
Yeah.
Because the car, and they can repossess it really fast. You know, a car, you know, and so they'll do that in a heartbeat. I mean, before they'll give you a loan on a house. That and costs less than the car.
Okay, so let me ask you guys, should sports be involved in any political discussion at all?
Absolutely.
Or should it stay in sports?
I think it needs to stay in sports because the one of the most important aspects
William
of
Brown.
It
Speaking.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
One of the most important aspects of it is that's what a lot of the people, maybe that are not as educated as everybody else, that's what they see. They see the sports. They see LeBron James. You know, they see Kevin Durant. So what happens is that when they make a statement, then it allows us to be able to move forth on the statement, not just sitting back up here and just waiting for somebody to do something.
I see Andrew Young. I see people that get it, understand the vision and the policy that's needed to take us to the next nexus.
Okay, so.
I see him, what he did in Atlanta and the way he thinks out of the box. And not some sports or cars or candy or bubblegum are working as a million. You're just $1 million slave. You don't control anything. You don't control your destiny. The white man tell you to get up off your knees. You get up off your knees or you don't get paid because we don't own anything.
And we get our advice from the wrong people.
Absolutely.
Half of these, many of these guys go broke. After a few years, why doesn't somebody tell them, William Brown, buy 5 condominiums in Washington, D.C. The first thing you do, have them managed. You'll never be poor again. You're 22 years old. Buy 5 condominiums in a high rent area. Never be poor. But they give their money away to these managers. If TIAA Cref had to pay $40 million for ripping off professors, most of them white, some of them physicists, engineers, and finance professors. If TIAA Cref will rip off white professors and have to pay a $40 million fine, what do we think is happening to a 21-year-old football player from Detroit?
Right.
And his money. We have to reclaim our brains and really do this cooperative economics thing instead of just talking about it all the time reactively.
Thank you. Okay. Amos, you were right on part, man. You can take my place. And you're younger and look better than me.
You're complimentary.
No. Our issue is not what we're doing. It's not what we're owning. If you want to get smart, we're getting ready to build 2 or 3 aircraft carriers in Newport News. Okay. $60 billion probably. You should be buying property in downtown Newport News today. That is going to be a 40-year economic uprise. Mm-hmm. If you have any money, invest it in Norfolk, in Park Place, in those areas that they're getting ready to knock down. And you will earn 100% of your money in 15 years. Get up off your knees. Don't even. I'm tired of it. Get up. So God got to tell you how to do something. He gave you a brain. What they should have done is said, look, you're taking our rights away from us. We have the intellectual property to make this business work. If you don't sell us a franchise, then we're gonna walk off the field.
Mm-hmm.
Not kneel down.
Mm-hmm.
Or a quarterback who can't get a job came up with this little idea and it worked out, but it isn't helping anybody. Our kids are still dying on the streets.
Well, it was a start.
It wasn't a start.
It was just a
joke.
And let's go back to what you said about the investing in the real estate, because both of y'all made that statement, and that's a very good statement. But how many people are going to be able to get a loan?
Well, I'm talking about the football players. No, I mean, specifically talking about these guys who get all this money.
They got it.
And they've been ill-advised. You know, remember what I love about what the Nation of Islam did.
Amen.
They helped. See, they're real conservative. We just need to own some things.
Right.
The nation, they have conservative values. And what they did, they got hold of Muhammad Ali and helped, along with a good wife, to make sure that he didn't get cheated like everybody else, these boxers and stuff. And he had a good head on his shoulders as well. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is we need to do, I'm talking specifically about the men with the capital.
Amen. Right.
See, what they have more than anything else, they got a platform, but they got the cash. Black people suffer from a lack of cash, and it's gotten worse in the last generation or so, because now we've been placed into these colleges that are 20 times more expensive than they were 50 years ago, mm-hmm. and black people can't write checks for those tuition bills. So what happens is we get neutral out of the process of reform. You can't get thrown in jail because you really need that job, because you can't even discharge the student loan in bankruptcy.
Absolutely.
Anymore. We've been put in a multiplicity of traps, and cash is the answer.
It is. And the Washington, Wall Street Journal just yesterday wrote an article. We have more jobs than people that are qualified to do the jobs.
Yes, I saw that.
And we have people that are graduating in these high schools today, some of them, that are marching down those aisles with not one opportunity to get a job. They have no marketable skills whatsoever. Can't literally read or write. And I would say 50% of them can't. And they doggone sure don't qualify for these coding jobs. And so we're sitting up here worried about the police, the 1% or 2% that are bad actors, instead of going to where the real action is. Education, ownership, morals, and values. That's where you want to go.
Okay, right. Well, speaking of morals and values, let's move on to our next topic, which is comedian Roseanne Barr took to Twitter in a racist tweet against former Obama administration official Valerie Jarrett. Barr said in her tweet, quote, Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby equals VJ. Now, Jarrett is African-American and was born in Iran. ABC canceled Roseanne's highly rated show, and with it went 200 or so jobs. And let's listen to what Valerie Jarrett had to say about the tweet.
Well, first of all, I think we have to turn it into a teaching moment. I'm fine. I'm worried about all the people out there who don't have a circle of friends and followers who come right to their defense. The person who's walking down the street minding their own business and they see somebody cling to their purse or walk across the street. Those ordinary examples of racism that happen every single day.
So the question then to you gentlemen is, Roseanne says she was just joking. But it clearly wasn't taken as a joke. Can it be taken as a joke, or should this type of racist rhetoric be allowed to stand as a joke? Amos.
We have a long history in the United States of black people being denigrated by being compared to primates. There's a brand new Law Review article, I believe it's in the UCLA Law Review or California somewhere, by Dr. Gregory Parks, an African-American a clinical psychologist slash law professor at Wake Forest, an associate dean down there. And he has a long history of how, even in law schools, blacks are viewed by students, white students, often as primates, as just fools to be monkeyed around and played with and, you know, monkified, whatever. The Roseanne issue, though, I think goes to something deeper. Again, she symbolizes insensitivity. And she was dealt with swiftly by the removal of her show. Query whether we're just marginalizing working class stories, black stories, which you don't get on TV anymore. It's all about the top 9.9%. But what I'm concerned about is the larger monkey dynamic in the culture. Right now in Raleigh, North Carolina, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is investigating one employer. I won't name the employer. But they have the same kind of thing. A black person was called a monkey in a high-level office in that institution, and it's a hostile work environment.
Exactly. Well, see, I think the part of the problem that a lot of people don't understand is why the term comparing a black person to a monkey is so offensive. Can you address that, William? Why is that offensive?
Well, I think it also goes back to that TV show, The Planet of the Apes. And when they did The Planet of the Apes, I think that kind of embroiled in their brains that we are not as we're subhuman. And I think that's the whole criteria of it, because racism, you're not born with it. You learn it. Mm-hmm. And as you get older and you start realizing that you have this privilege, well, then I can talk down to people and it doesn't make a difference, because no matter what I say, and with the economics and our administration now, it seems to open up that door to allow speaking like that to be okay. That the Ku Klux Klan doesn't have to wear sheets anymore, because that's the direction that this country has always been going in. And being an ape is always going to be associated with us black folks.
Bill, I see you shaking your head.
At my age, I'm so disappointed that we're still having the same kind of discussions that we had when we conquered them. Our parents were really smart. Our grandparents were really, really smart. They took us to church every Sunday. And the first thing that they would get up and say, and we had a black Jesus in our church, Jesus love you. If you don't love yourself, then nobody else will love you. If you will let anything get under your skin to stop you from accomplishing your mission in life, then that's your fault. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And so what we could go do 50 years ago is bury ourselves in a very strong, upwardly bound black community in Kansas City. We didn't have to deal with this crap. If we didn't like it or what somebody was saying, we turned the TV off. We went to our own movies. We went to our own institutional things that were giving us some think of this is how you are. We went to Nicodemus, Kansas, where the folks in Kansas decided to create their own city.
Yes.
So they could see black as mayors, blacks as city managers, black as the postal, black as the police. We were taught that we were better. Actually, we were taught that we were better than white folks. They said the life in America originated in Africa. So you guys are part of us. So we never, no one could ever talk down to us because we knew where our strengths were. We knew where our moral was. Roseanne Barr is a joke, is a joke. And I take it as a joke. I don't care what she says. I mean, what that doesn't bother me, not in one iota, because my children know the fact that they are better than the crazy, idiotic, ignorant people that are saying this crazy stuff. But we want to find an excuse as to uplift them. Roseanne Barr will be on Netflix. She'll make more money than she ever made before. And that's all right with her. What I'm telling my kids, regardless of that, you are what you are. You are proud, you're black, we came from strong beginnings, and we understand who our faith is in, and that's in us, and we don't care what the white folks say.
Well, okay, you talk about how sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, except that if we keep perpetuating negative stereotypes about certain groups of people, doesn't that help continue the negative treatment, because it leads right into...
Not if we as a community teach our kids better and differently. We have to reestablish our culture. We have to be black and proud. We have to do the kind of things that we had to do to get over this, like James Brown, like Muhammad Ali, like Malcolm X. We had role models that told us that we were better.
The question from Facebook, if the president of ABC had been, or the programming person for ABC had been white, as opposed to Ms. Dungy, who is African-American, do you think the reaction would have been the same, Amos?
Probably. I mean, after all, Ms. Dungy hired her in the first place and was extolling having a working class, Trump supporting character on the TV. And again, I've been ambivalent and remain ambivalent about taking her show off. I think the Cosby Show shouldn't have been removed from the air. I don't like this trying to rewrite history just because somebody said something bad later, or you found out they said something you now don't agree with, like Joy Reid 10 years ago.
Right.
I'm getting tired of this. And the fact of the matter is, especially the real issue, again, distractions. The real issue is, why are there no working class white people or black people on TV? Good Times was a wholesome, black, intact family with values. They were always revering God. Go back and watch Good Times. And they didn't have what we would now call the culture of poverty, even though they were in the projects. They were moving somewhere.
Absolutely.
And the fact of the matter is that
Jeffersons, too.
And the Jeffersons had moved on up. And the fact they moved on up to got a piece of the pie.
That's right.
And the fact of the matter, and we all watched that show. And so the fact of the matter is that I don't like that now on the TV and in the movies, it's one subset. And the black characters are not even reflective of black life. Scandal?
She's
up here having an affair with the white president? The vixen trope? Really? So we flush will say, oh, we got a victory now. No. Make a cash donation into the fund for community development.
Amen.
So we can rebuild our schools and subsidize what we're going to buy by the shipbuilding yard.
But you know what, you guys? Let me throw this
out. Empowerment.
Don't you think that there's enough room for all of it?
No.
You don't.
No.
Okay, hang on one second before you tell me why. If you're just joining us, we're talking about race in America with our roundtable pundits, attorney and executive director of the African American Trust for Historic Preservation, Amos Jones, community activist Bill Thomas, and real estate professional William R. Brown. Okay, now the question is, don't we have room for all of it?
No.
You said no. Why?
No, because we don't put things in priority. Our priority right now is that our morals and values in our community, as Amos has just highlighted through all these crazy movies like Claws and all this other stuff, are at such a low level of ugliness and nastiness that we can't discern the difference. We knew the difference. We don't know the difference now. We don't. That's why you can have some heavyset white woman call you whatever she called the lady, and that means that don't mean anything to me. Nothing. You know what means something to me? I can invest in Newport News and buy some property down there to be able to capture some of this $20 billion worth of investment that's going to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this means to me? I can't give the school in Baltimore that kids were freezing in $100,000 so they can buy a heater. You know what means to me? That only 15% of the people that live in inner cities within Newport News or Norfolk and stuff don't have transportation to get to work or education to buy their books or meal to feed their children. or entertainment.
Okay, but let me push back for a minute. So if that doesn't mean anything to you,
it's not a high priority.
No. Okay. All right. So it's not a high priority. But then, so you walk into a Starbucks and they put the handcuffs on you because you're waiting for someone.
I'm not
going to
walk in Starbucks and pay $8 for a cup of coffee. I'm not a fool. I have never bought a cup of coffee at Starbucks. I'm going to 7-Eleven, Wawa, and get me my dollar cup of coffee.
Bill, you're missing my point.
No, that is a point.
But my point.
People don't like you. Even the black ones that are working there, they look
right.
at you differently.
He's right.
They look at you differently.
That's right.
Do you have $8?
So
this,
you don't think
this brother sitting up here? He ain't got $8 for no dang on coffee.
So you don't think that if we don't say something when things like the comparison to monkeys and other negative,
I didn't say that.
I'm asking the question and other negative things that are said, or the arrest. If we go sit in a restaurant and ask to use a bathroom without buying something, all those things, all that implicit bias. You don't think that that makes a difference in terms of our lives on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference, because what happens is that, from my point of view, Bill, what happens is that if we don't discuss these things that are going on and we don't try to address it, and social media has been very helpful for us because it gets to be able to go out there and it happens almost in real time.
Wait till he finishes. Let him.
It happens in real time. If we don't address these issues, then they're going to keep going on and on and on. And a little bit is better than none.
No, that's not true.
Okay, why?
All money ain't good money. Until we teach our kids how to respect themselves and some moral authority where they have common sense to know the difference, we got a problem. That's where our problem is. It's with the family. Our problem isn't with these out income things and social media. You'd be crazy. Look at these children going to proms and things. You think they're going to some kind of, I don't know. Look how they dressed. I mean, look how they talk. They are entitled. And this is the worst thing of it all. Our kids, too many of our African-American kids, feel entitled. Entitled. Like white folks. You ain't white, you black. You're not going to get a darn thing. You got to work for it. You got to have morals and values. You got to have some kind of God or Muhammad or something as your basic moral compass. That's our problem. Turn off social media.
So what do we do about it?
I don't know.
What do we do about it? Amos, what do we do about it?
Well, I was just remarking earlier today, if we look at kind of the white community and some of what's going on, that we have the tragedy of Kate Spade's suicide earlier this week. And now this
and
morning,
now
we
have
Anthony Bourdain, the 61-year-old journalist, evidently hanged himself in Paris in a hotel room. And I called an older sister of mine and was talking about how there's a profound sadness that I feel, how you can have such success in worldly material things that we chase in the rap videos. And yet you're broken, frankly. And I'm an ordained Baptist deacon. So, I'll just come out of the closet here on WHRV radio as an ordained Baptist deacon.
Amen,
I'm
going to
be openly black.
Good.
And an open black Baptist deacon. And my view is that fundamentally, you have to have your spiritual house in order.
Amen.
That's where it starts. And see, we used to understand that in the movement.
We don't.
So much so that we wanted our movement to be a moral witness.
Absolutely.
And that's why we had to pass over Sister Claudette Colvin and go with Rosa Parks on that bus.
Right.
Because we couldn't have people who cussed out white folk willy-nilly, who maybe had a baby without a husband, maybe with a married man.
Don't start preaching.
We had Rosa because we understood when you're oppressed and beat down from slavery, the burden of proof is on you. It is not fair.
Right.
So we made sure, we were downtown picketing the store where we wanted to try on the nice hats and gloves and coats and that we looked good.
Right.
We were in our Sunday best. We don't do that anymore. We sag to the protest rally. People show up on marijuana, which is the worst thing that's happening. The last thing black people need is drugs.
Legal marijuana.
We have it coming out
legal
everywhere. It's a trick. And people are driving around smoking marijuana in Washington, D.C., and the arrests are going up.
And in Hampton Roads. Wow.
And people haven't gotten it. We need to return to the basics.
Amen.
Let's talk to Frank in Norfolk. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Yes.
Turn your radio down for me, please, okay?
Thank you very much. This is an excellent program. I want to concur with Reverend Bill Thomas and his wise wisdom of focusing on our inner motivation and our inner moral, nobody is going to give us African Americans anything. We have to do it by ourselves. And I think a lot of African Americans are doing it. I see a lot of entrepreneurs. I wish there were more. And I think Mr. Thomas is working for that. He's a role model, but there are many role models. And I think we are moving forward. And then let's not focus on the bad. Let's try to counsel our children not to smoke, or not to drink, and to focus more on going into the Mecca of the United States for African Americans, Compton University.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks so much, Frank, for the call. I appreciate that. So are you guys saying that maybe we need to take a pause and come inside our community first before we worry about how we get along with everybody else?
Yeah.
Is that a...
Yeah, I think so, because it goes back to the spirituality. And Bill, you said it. You said the education. We have to be educated to be able to do it. And we can't go to a school that's not going to educate us for what we need to know, except for their history. What about our history? And I think that that's something that's so important, Barbara, because if we don't start from the inside, taking the knee is not going to make a difference. The economics is not going to make a difference. The most important thing is that it's got to start at home. And when it starts at home, the question is, can we take it outside and can we do it and not just say it?
Well, you talking about it takes a village?
Whoever, Bill.
It takes a village to raise a child? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100,000% correct. When we were growing up, all of us, our villages raised us.
Okay. Well, what are we doing today?
Nothing.
We're doing social media.
It's just, I really am perplexed about it. I do know that I knew right from wrong. Here's the basic of my whole life and how I think I've been successful. I knew right from wrong. I know when I did right, and I know what I did wrong. And I also knew what the consequences of me doing wrong and my parents finding out about it. They didn't need no police. Every grown man would come down there and whip my behind. And you get 3 or 4 whippings.
Before you got home.
Well, in today's society, if that were to happen, now I'm asking the question.
Yes.
I'm saying, but with today's society, if you were to do that, then someone may take that in a totally different manner. And therefore you'd be
today,
in more trouble. So what do we do?
You don't need a switch.
So what do we do today?
You need somebody with moral authority that's making this message pronounced. The ability to change a kid's mind these days is not going to be done with a stick or a whip, not even with a gun. It's going to be with someone that's speaking the truth with a moral authority that's young. Our generation blew it. I'm a baby boomer. We blew it. First time I got out, went to the white school, got my job in New York City as a vice president of a bank down there. I moved out of Queens, moved down to where all the hip people lived, moved to Shaker Heights, Ohio, and then, you know, just abandoned my whole community. And then finally figured out, man, I went home. What has happened? You know what happened? Mm-hmm. We didn't go back.
Mm-hmm.
We did not go back. The authority that we had, and then I looked at my class yearbook, and even the bad guys weren't immoral. They were bad, but they didn't shoot anybody. They didn't kill anybody. They didn't curse. They didn't go around here impregnating women and not taking care of their responsibilities. They understood the difference between right and wrong. And we knew that. We don't have that no more. Now, social media has now taken over. And the reason I had to take my child out of Norfolk Public Schools and send her to St. Pius, because she would always say, St. Pius the 10th, is because she would always come on and say, well, so-and-so does this. I'm not doing anything wrong. Oh, yes, you are doing something wrong. And this nun is going to tell you the difference between the two. And then you get that in you, then you can go out and be with the world. But you can't be in the world and then try to direct the world. You can't be a millionaire football player that plays for the Baltimore, it's not the Baltimore Colts, what are they, the Baltimore
Ravens.
And then see black children freezing in those public schools, and then take a knee for that.
I got you.
And then we wind up,
you okay?
And then we wind up putting our charity dollars into another midnight basketball league and things like that. It's an authority question. Mm-hmm. It's an authority question. We used to have a sense of deference to people who we trusted, who had done well, who had demonstrated a commitment to the community, and who had put something on the line for the collective. And if you go to every community in America, every black community, again, prior to the 1970s, you would see this. There were miniature Martin Luther Kings and Corettas and others all over the place. Today, we don't defer to people who are worthy of deference and thought leadership in our community. We will defer to a white commentator on television. We'll defer to a white professor. It's funny, we go to these divinity schools now. We have more education than ever. We'll put our ministers in a divinity school to be taught theology from somebody who looks nothing like our great-grandmother, who delivered us up out of slavery, taught us the Bible, and set us up to have a fine family life.
Right.
So we will be rewrite. We're just relearning things. And it's because I think in our community, somehow we've lost confidence at some point in these patterns.
So how do we get it back? How do we get back? How do we get to a place where we have people like we used to, like the Martin Luther Kings of the world and so forth, where there's some solid leadership and deference to people who are thought leaders within our own community? And then, the other question is, how do we, while we're trying to fix our community and fix ourselves, then how do we also not be viewed as trying to be separatist or different?
I think people have to reposition. We're going to have to reposition ourselves and reassert our authority. Those of us who know what we're doing, who have demonstrated that we care, who have saved people's lives, who have a record, just like politicians have to prove it. I think that we're going to have to go back among the community, because I still have more in common socio-historically, theologically with people in the ghetto than I do most of my classmates from the Harvard Law School class of 2006, even though I'm not from the ghetto at all. The black circumstance, the way slavery worked, these intergenerational transfers of wealth that we don't have, that have caused us to stratify, that have calcified, well, that's not changing. So we're going to have to go back to our first love, reimpose ourselves, care, lead, love, and start from scratch. And with the broken homes that we have, we're just going to have to stand in. We're going to have to stand in the gap for the now African American women are going to prison in larger and larger numbers. There's an AIDS crisis. They say that black men in Mississippi have a 1 in 2 chance of contracting AIDS in a sexual encounter.
And no one's talking about it.
Right. I had to go to BBC documentary. It popped up on my YouTube. And I started watching and thought, my goodness, nobody's talking about this. Are they glad that people are going extinct? Because that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
Extinction. So we're going to have to do some triage.
Great.
I'm trying to check with Lisa to see. Okay, let's talk to Heather in Norfolk. Hi, Heather. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I want to give compliments to this wonderful, lively, difficult debate and points of view. And I need to bring in Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is a giant. He is African American. I know you all know him. His STEM program, he is encouraging science and math. Our theology needs to follow science and not the other way around in the 21st century. I'm a Presbyterian minister. The church, the temple, the mosque are our foundations, the love of family or grandma. I was reading Harriet Tubman as a child and reading liberation theology out of South America, the brown, the black, red and yellow, black and white. We are precious in God's sight. And let's praise God for people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who will give us skills. I encourage every family to pay attention. He has a wonderful book on lay science in astrophysics for this universe. We are on a very small, small planet that from the moon looks like a little blue marble, as you all know. God bless. Thank you, Barbara, for everything you do for this Tidewater region. You are a star.
Oh, thank you, Heather. I appreciate that very, very much. And thank you for your phone call.
And you should be acknowledged for it.
Thank you, Bill.
The barometer is down today, so if you have sinus...
Yes, I know. I have sinus.
You got a headache, and it comes right up on you, and you're going to die, and I thought I was going to die there for a minute, but I'm okay. But,
you're okay?
All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all good. But the issue is, we're not preaching. I'm scared. I'm frightened. And I just think we got to get out of this issue of this social media and just start caring about each other. I mean, when is the last time you just put down the phone and just talk to a group of students? Just sit down and talk to them. Put the phones down, get them out of the way, and just tell them this is how I see right and wrong. I may not be 100% right, but I've lived a pretty good life. Mm-hmm. And I had a moral setting. I had a footing. And as this young lady said, you had a talent. We will sit up here today, and I'm not picking on Norfolk or Newport News or Richmond or any city, but I would darn bet you in certain zip codes in our graduation ceremonies today, tomorrow, and Sunday, that kids are marching out of these high school graduations with zero marketable talents and all kinds of issues, moral issues, health issues, family issues. We didn't have to deal with all of that. And we had a compass. And we knew, some of us didn't believe in it, some of us did, that if we did certain things the way that our parents led us, it wasn't what our parents told us about the Bible. We watched them to see what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And then if we could match those two together, we were successful.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Ken in Newport News. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I'm 57 years old. I'm married and I have a daughter. I'm Caucasian, white. And I don't think white people really get it, to be honest with you. I don't think we really have a good understanding of the African-American struggle in our country. Mm. I think that most of us were brought through grade school. We were introduced to the issue of slavery and its abolishment. And I think that's really pretty much all we got. Mm. We didn't understand all the difficulties that have followed since Reconstruction. And I'll be honest with you, I really didn't start reading African-American studies about African-American studies until Charlottesville with
wow.
the KKK.
Wow, really?
Exactly.
Wow.
Because I wanted to get an African-American perspective on hate groups in our country. And the first book I read was White Rage by Carolyn Anderson. Mm-hmm. And I'm now reading We Were 8 Years in Power by Ta-Nehisi Coates, I believe.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, yes. Mm-hmm.
Brilliant writers.
Mm-hmm.
And it leaves me, I feel I have a better understanding and appreciation for the history and a sense that we really haven't done right by the African-American community. But I think being uneducated about it is a big problem.
Wow.
And I do think that, you know, when I listen to your show, I hear really positive and emotional energy coming from you guys about how we need to do this and we need to do that. I think it's wonderful, but I think the deck is stacked. The cards you've been dealt as a people aren't letting you make any progress. I think you need more white people to understand what you have gone through. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, I feel like my eyes have been opened.
Ken, you know what? I really appreciate your call. I wish we had a little more time. I want to let the roundtable respond to
Absolutely.
You. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show. But thank you so much for calling and for your openness and honesty. We appreciate that. Amos, what's your reaction to what
Ken
said?
Yeah, there are structural changes at a structural level that also have to accompany this. We would not be as far along as we are without aggressive affirmative action, more in contracting than education.
Amen.
Maynard Jackson's programs and the jobs programs of Marion Barry
right.
did more to advance us than stuffing us into Ivy League schools when we could have gone to Hampton and done fine. Right. It's funny about privileged white people. I taught at a great law school in North Carolina, Campbell University School of Law. Many of those students had plenty of money at home. Their parents wrote a check for the $50,000 or $60,000. It didn't matter where they went to law school. They didn't need a designer degree.
Right.
They were fine. Black people are very far behind. Our investments have to reflect that. But we also in our own community sometimes are not aware because we do such a great job of looking good. Black people cosmetically have it going on.
Absolutely.
We'll roll up in a neighborhood and we look just as prosperous as the white community, but yet most of it is paycheck to paycheck. There's a death in the family. Somebody's uninsured. There's immediate crisis and trauma. People are taking care of grandnieces and grandnephews Absolutely. And grandchildren, now great-grandchildren. And there's a lot of stuff behind the veneer. See, even in slavery, we look good. I mean, we made it look good in terms of our strength.
You had to.
And we had to. That's part of survival. If you tug back the curtain, especially you start opening up these bank accounts, America has not done right by us. And we're going to have to make everyone aware, including our own people, so that we advocate for the right policies and the right preaching, both together, and we will overcome.
Okay, Bill?
I think you just hit on such a good point, Amos. And then we are negligent that what they're doing now is like getting rid of history in the SOLs. There's no history in SOLs now from kids pretty much from the first to the seventh grade. So the history that we were taught early on by great-grandmother and grandmother and stuff like that, our kids, the white kids, like this gentleman just said, they don't get it at all. And our kids don't get our truths. So we are definitely looking through different lenses that they don't understand the power, the influence, the nurturing of our community. They see us as hip-hops and all these kind of crazy things, when in fact that is not the truth. And it's, when they take that piece out of education, where we are now diminishing the teaching of American history, I didn't know, and my sister went to Harvard and MIT and all, we all did well, I didn't know that the first slave hit Hampton.
Yeah, and
I didn't know that in 1619.
We had a show on that a couple weeks ago.
I did not know that. I did not know that the first child that was born in the city of Hampton. I didn't know that cities like Hampton were the strength. I didn't know that the first terrorist act that was committed in the United States of America is when they burned the shanties down surrounding Fort Monroe and the Hanson Passion Oak. They burnt Hampton to the ground. Burn it to the ground. An act of terrorism that the history books won't tell you is terrorism. So I didn't know that. And so the white folks don't know it. And then lastly, the pain, which this gentleman was saying, when I first went to school my first day, I couldn't go to the white school with my friends. I had to go to the black school. And I'll never forget that. My mother cried. I'll never forget that. I was 5 years old.
Wow. It still impacts you today.
It's dead. Yeah.
William, you get the last word. You got 1 minute.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. It goes back to the family. It has to start with the family. It has to go back to us, because when we were growing up, we always had somebody to look after us. And now you have the latchkey's babies. They come home. Then you have babies having babies. And the next thing you know, there's no more fibers anymore. And our fabric has definitely disintegrated. So how can we do better? By taking the opportunity to talk to our children, talk to our neighbors, talk to our communities and say, hey, we can do this. We can overcome.
And with that, gentlemen, we are out of time.
And I'm single.
And you're Bill had to get that in there. He is still looking, ladies. Amos Jones, Bill Thomas, and William R. Brown, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us for this edition of Another View. You can listen to this program or any other Another View show by downloading the AV podcast at anotherviewradio.org. And while you're there, please sign up for our eView newsletter. It's a once-a-week reminder of upcoming shows. And do me a favor, we're trying to get to 2,000 likes on Facebook, even though I heard what you said about social media. So go to our Facebook page and like us. And I'm on Twitter at Barbara Ham Lee. Next week on Another View, we go behind the scenes of our own show with producer Lisa Godley, audio engineer Victor Bowen, and Bert Schmidt, president and CEO of WHRO Public Media and the man behind the creation of Another View. Our theme music was composed and performed by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Victor Bowen is our audio engineer. And Jordan Yowell answered our phones. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Thank you so very, very much for listening to Another View.